February the 11th, and we are in Perek Chelek. We are in Tzadi Beis and Beis and Tzadi Gimel and Aleph tonight, where we will be discussing the we're in the middle of the Mason Shech Yechezkel, the Mason Yechezkel brought back to life, and we talked about where they were in the middle of discussing who they were, and
we were also discussing if they were, right?
Well, that we said already. We said that was a question of whether it happened at all, the raya to Shechias Mason. But now, since most Shitas all they did happen, it's an actual story. So who were they? So we had five opinions in the Gemara who they were, ranging from the Bnei Ephraim who left Mitzrayim early, to people who did Chataim, three different types of Chataim, and then that they were the Bachurim that were brought into Golos by Nebuchadnezzar, and they were killed. From there, we have the connection between this story of the Mesim Shechi Yechezkel and the famous story of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah being thrown into the Kivshan HaEsh, into the furnace, with Nebuchadnezzar. So let's take this step by step. First of all, in the discussion of who they were, so the fifth opinion is, as we mentioned, from Rabbi Yochanan, that Eilu Meisim Shev Bikas Dura. These are the Meisim, these are the ones who were killed in Bikas Dura. From Rabbi Yochanan, Minar Eishad Rabbas Bikas Dura, that there's different places, Rashi tells us. Shebesha Shehigla Nebuchadnezzar Rashas Yisrael, when Nebuchadnezzar Rasha took Klal Yisrael into Golos, Hayo Behen Bachurin, there were these young men, Shayu Meganin Esacham Abiyofion, they degraded the sun with their beauty. And the Kastiyos, the women of the Kastim, they would see these young men, and they would become Zavos, they would bleed. And they told their husbands, and the husbands told the king, Siva HaMelech, the king commanded, when he had them killed. So, and they still bled. So the king commanded and had them trampled and completely destroyed. So
you translated Zavos as bleeding.
Yeah.
So isn't a Zava the form of flowing tuma that happens to a woman?
Yeah.
Now, does that happen to Goyim?
Do they become tame?
Mm-hmm.
Zavos just means they were bleeding.
They were bleeding?
It was like... No, it's blood.
That's gonorrhea.
Yeah, that was like a...
Ziva for a woman is blood.
Blood.
It's blood. It's blood. It's blood, not as in her normal time.
Okay.
But it's a flow of blood. That's what Ziva is for a woman. For a man, it's different. For a woman, that's what it is. Now...
Why did that upset their husband so much?
What's that?
Why did that upset their husband?
Okay, so Rashi says...
That was a goy.
That's your wife?
Rashi says...
It's becoming inconvenient.
Rashi says, Shoif Ois, that they were bleeding. It has nothing to do with that. Rashi says, Shoif Ois, Nachmas Taiva, because of desire. See, this is what the Gemara calls Dam Chimud. We know that there is a minig. It's normally done that a chasana and kala separate a week before their chasana. Now, why do they separate a week before their chasana? The reason is because of Dam Chimud. That's the reason. Now, what is Dam Chimud? Dam Chimud, the Gemara says, is that when a woman has a very strong taiva, and that taiva is not met, then that can cause her to bleed. That can cause zivus. So that's where it comes from, that a chasana and kala don't see each other a week before the chasana, because the concern is if he would see her, then she would become... have a lot of taiva, and since they're not married, then she would be shoifas dam. She would become a zava. So if it happens more than a week before the chasana, okay, so there still is a week to count shiva nikiyim and be able to go to the mikvah. But within a week before the chasana, it would set up a situation where it likely would be a chupas nida. That's the reason for the week long separation.
Isn't there more than that? There's a halacha that there has to be at least a week from the engagement until the chasana.
But we have that.
Right, but I'm saying that's not.
But that's not the reason for this. This is all Dam Chimud. What we do today is because of Dam Chimud.
But I'm saying the reason for the week is also because of Dam
Chimud? Yeah.
Is that something? Is that one of those only in Gemara time things?
No.
Really?
I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know how often it happens, but that is the concern. That's why we separate today. It's not really separation that's necessary. So everybody says Chasan and Kala can't see each other. Can they talk to each other? Can they talk on the phone? Can they wave to each other? All these things are immaterial. The main thing is that they should not do anything that the Kala will become overly emotional. That's the main reason for the separation. So if they can talk on the phone, or they can even see each other and not become overly emotional, she can become not overly emotional about the wedding. It's there's no problem with that. It's an issue only if she will become overly emotional about it. But that's the issue. So over here, the reason why they were shofar's dam, they were shofar's zavos, is because of taiva, and that's what bothered their husbands, because these women were misave for the bachura Yisrael. That was the problem. Not because of the actual dam, but it was because their taiva was for the Bachura Yisrael, not for their husbands. And that's why Nebuchadnezzar had them killed. And then still, the women had taiva for the dead Bachura Yisrael, because as Rashi says, they were still they were still beautiful, and so he had them trampled. That's the Maisa. Now, what is the inyan that there were these Bachurim that were so beautiful going into Golos? What's the inyan of that? So hold that for a moment. Let's explore this a little bit further. So the Gemara tells us now that those are the Mesim that Yechezkel brought back to life. Now, Yechezkel went into Golos along with He went in with. We know that there were two Galuyos. There were two times that Klal Yisrael went to Galus Bavel. There was Galus Yechanya and Galus Tzidkiyahu. Galus Yechanya is 11 years before the Churban Beis Hamikdash, and at that time Nebuchadnezzar he really attacked and defeated Yerushalayim three times. So this was the first time he just subjugated everybody. It's really four times, actually, if you go through all the history of Nebuchadnezzar, first with Yehoyakim and then with Yechanya. So, basically, let's start from the beginning. He conquered Yerushalayim and subjugated Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim was Yechanya's father. He subjugated Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim remained a subject of Nebuchadnezzar for 3 years, and then he rebelled for 3 years. Nebuchadnezzar came back and conquered Yerushalayim again, and this time executed Yehoyakim and put in his place his son Yechanya as king. Then he went back to Bavel. When he got back to Bavel, his advisor said to him, "That was a foolish thing to do. You put the son in place of the father. The father rebelled against you. Now you put his son in charge. You don't think the son's going to rebel?" So Nebuchadnezzar turned around and came back, and at the end of the year, it was 1 year later, between the two traveling, back to Babel and back to Eretz Yisrael, he again conquered Yerushalayim, took Yechanya into Golus, along with the Cheresh v'Hamasker. He took the what we would call the intelligentsia. He took the leadership of Klal Yisrael into Golus. Then he put in Yechanya's place Tzidkiyahu as king. Tzidkiyahu was Yechanya's uncle, the brother of Yehoyakim, and he became king, and he ruled for 11 years, and then eventually Nebuchadnezzar came back and conquered it again and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Yechanya, when he was taken into Golus, we know this, we read about this every year. We're all very much aware of Yechanya. Where do we read about Golus Yechanya every year? No. How about in 2 weeks? Ish Yehudi haya b'shushan abiro u'shmam rechai ben yar ben shimon kish ishimini. Right? That's the pasuk we all say together. What's the next pasuk? That he lands in Echatrap, asher haglam Yerushalayim, im hagola asher haglasa, im Yechanya melech Yehuda. Asher hegla Nebuchadnezzar, or I think Retzar melech Bavel. So the we read over there that in Megillat Esther that Mordechai was taken into Galus with Yechonya, not later on, but he was taken earlier because Mordechai was one of the leaders of Klal Yisrael, so he was taken into Galus 11 years before Korban HaBayis.
This is pretty old then, right?
Yeah,
because Korban was 70 years and Paras was at the end.
Yeah, so yeah. The story of Purim takes place, I believe, 14 years before. Before the end of the Gulf. Yeah.
When he's taken.
Now, Mordechai, when he went to Galus with Yechonya, the other famous names that went into Galus with Yechonya, besides Mordechai, are
Daniel,
Hanania, Mishael, Azariah, and Yechezkel. Yechezkel also went into Galus at that time. They all went into Galus at that time, 11 years before Korban HaBayis.
When was Chagai Tzfar Malachi?
They were at the end after they came back to at the end of the 70 years of Galus. Now at that time, when they went into Galus, at Yirmiyah, Sefer Yirmiyah and Sefer Yechezkel really are written around the same time. Yechezkel has Nevuah in Bavel when he's taken into Bavel. First he had Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael, but then he has Nevuah. His main Nevuah is in Bavel, and at the same time, Yirmiyahu is having Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael. He stayed. He was not taken into Galus at that time. But that's the backdrop to this whole story. So Yechezkel was taken into Galus along with Yechonya, in Galus Yechonya, with Mordechai, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. They were all taken into Galus together. These Bachurim were also taken into Galus then, and they were first killed and then trampled, destroyed, mutilated by Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is one of the four kings that the Gemara says in history that was Malach B'Kippa. Kippa means a dome, as a kippa, as a yarmulke, means a dome, that he ruled over the entire known world. Nebuchadnezzar ruled over the entire known world. The Gemara tells us there were very few kings that had that distinction. One is Nebuchadnezzar. Who's another one? Achashverosh is another one.
Nimrod?
What's that?
Nimrod?
Gemara doesn't say Nimrod. But
Nimrod.
What?
Alexander the Great? No, because he didn't get Persia.
But Shlomo HaMelech also, but he was. And the Gemara discusses, you know, the Gemara in Megillah talks about who else was.
Really?
Yeah, the Gemara says Shlomo HaMelech either is counted, he's not counted in the list, either because he didn't finish his Melucha, because he was deposed before the end of his Melucha, the whole story with Ashmedai, the king, the head of the demons, whatever that means, or he wasn't in the list because he not only ruled over the Tachtonim, he also ruled over the Elyonim. He ruled over the Shadim as well, not just over people. So, okay.
But I thought Nebuchadnezzar never conquered Egypt.
The Gemara says he ruled over everything. Ruled means he controlled.
Okay.
It means he was in full control, that everybody had to own up to him. That's what it means, that he was in full control of the world.
When was Chizkiyah?
What?
When was Chizkiyah?
Chizkiyah was earlier. Chizkiyah was early. He was in the time of Yeshaya Nabi.
How many years is before that?
Well, Yeshaya is misnabe about the Chizkiyah was in the time of Sancheirav, which was in the Asaras Hashvatim, went into Galus.
Right.
That's earlier.
How long is that? About 30 decades or just 2 years?
No, it may be. I don't remember exactly, maybe 100 years. Okay. A while before the Korban HaBayis. Now, that's important. It's a very important fact to know when Sancheirav occurred. Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. So that's very important. We're going to talk about Sancheirav extensively when we get to it, right? As you know, in the Blatt Dor Ahed, we have all about Sancheirav. But there's a very important relationship between the story of Sancheirav and what we have over here, our Gemara tonight. Mm-hmm. Which you may have seen already. What?
Is there a raya that the story with Bahurim happened 11 years before the Korban, not after the...
No, that... Well, oh, are you saying, when did that happen? You're right. I don't know when that happened. You're right. I don't mean to say that. You're right. Did the Bachurim happen in Galus Yechon or Galus Yechon? I don't know. And yeah, that's a good question. I don't... You're right. That's true. I shouldn't have said that. We don't know when they came into Galus. Now, the... When Nebuchadnezzar... with the story of Hanania, Mishael, Azariah takes place, let's just follow the history over here of what happened. In Sefer Daniel... So Daniel is taken. The Sefer Daniel tells us in the first parak about how Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah are taken into Galus. They're brought into Galus together with Galus Yechonya, and they are, as you've probably seen in the Gemara already later on, on Tzadi Gimel Beis, they are appointed to be in the king's palace, and they're able to stop themselves from, as we know, from laughing and all that. We'll talk about that, Mitzvah Hashem, when we get to Tzadi Gimel Beis. They're in the king's palace, and they distinguish themselves as being very special, and the pasuk says that they were all very big chachamim. That of all the people that Nebuchadnezzar was having groomed to be his advisors or his cabinet members and all that, it says v'lonimtza mikulam ki Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, v'Azariah. No one was as great as those four. V'yamdu lifnei hamelech. And the pasuk says v'chol dvar chachmas bina shebikesh mehem hamelech v'insaim. And he found that they were better than everybody else, better than the Chartumim and the stargazers. They were better than everybody, and particularly Daniel. By he Daniel achnas achas lekar shamach. That Daniel, it says also, one second, it says that he also, yeah, was the hayalavim moela arbatam. All four of them nasan lahem alokim mada vehaskel b'chol sefer v'chachma. They knew all the chachmas. V'Daniel hevin b'chol chazon v'chalamos. He also knew how to interpret dreams. He was one step above in Chachma, he was one step above Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, that he was able to interpret dreams. So of the four of them, and his name is always listed first, he clearly, either he was the oldest, or the leader of the four, or the greatest Chacham of the four, but he's the one that's of the four of them.
Where was Ezra at this time?
Ezra is, I imagine, younger, because he leads Klal Yisrael back at the end of the Golos.
They're not prophets though, right?
Daniel is not called a prophet, he's in Ksuvim. He's what it means he wasn't on the level of Nevuah of the other Nevi'im, but he clearly had
visions.
Maybe he wrote Sefer Daniel. Which is Ruach. Well, it's not all Aramaic. It's only partial. But this is Ruach HaKodesh to write. You know, so
he had a vision that other people didn't see.
Yeah. So what it means that he wasn't a Nabi, it's hard to know what, you know, whatever that means on the level of Nevuah. Now we're going to see differences between the four of them. That Daniel is one category and Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah another category. So far, one difference is that Daniel seems to be the leader of the four, and also he seems to be the greater Chacham, especially since the first story that we learn in Sefer Daniel is that Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. And he wakes up in the morning, he's very, very troubled by the dream, and he calls in his Chartumim. It's unbelievable, the setup that he does. He calls in all of the Chartumim and all of them, just like Paro, and he says, I had this dream, and, you know, and I don't, and I want to know what the dream is. So they come in, and they say, oh, almighty king, tell us the dream, and we'll interpret it for you. And he says, I don't remember the dream. So I want you to tell me the dream and interpret it for me. And if you don't do it, then I'm going to cut you into pieces and destroy your homes. And if you do it, then I'll give you all kinds of presents.
No pressure.
Right. And you have until tonight or until tomorrow morning. That's what he told them. So they went back and forth with the king, like, oh, we can't possibly do this. It's not Shaykh. No one's ever asked for such a thing before. It's impossible. How's it? And he said, nothing doing. And when they couldn't interpret the dream, he commanded Aryoch, his executioner, to go around and wipe them all out. And he was going around killing all of them. Now, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah were four of the advisors to the king. So but they apparently weren't there when the king asked for the dream. So the Aryoch comes to kill Daniel. Daniel says, what's going on? So Aryoch explains it to him. So Daniel says, okay, give me a minute. And he goes to the king and he says, give me some time to go and find out what your dream was about. So the king gave him time. So he goes, he tells Hananiah, Mishael, v'Azariah, and they go and daven to Hashem. And then that night, Daniel has a dream and he's told everything. So he goes to the king and he tells the king all about what the dream was, with the four different, the creature with the golden head and the whole business, and it represents the different galuyos, etc. And he tells Nebuchadnezzar all about it, and Nebuchadnezzar is awed that Daniel not only figured out what the dream was, but he told him the interpretation, the whole business. He's awed by it, and he says, "There's no one greater than your Hashem." This is not the pasuk brought in the Gemara over here. This is before that. there's nobody greater, nothing greater than your Hashem. And he says that, let's see.
If the cartoon would be smart, they would have just made up a dream.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have rung true to him. As he was, right? There's the thing, right?
They probably did.
So at that time, this is the pasuk the Gemara brings at the end. It says, "Beidayin." Then Malchus Nebuchadnezzar nefal al anpoi, fell on his face. Ula Daniel sagen, and he bowed down to Daniel. Umincha v'nichaychin amar lenasachalei, and he wanted to bring karbonos to Daniel. This is where he made Daniel into a god, to a deity. So, and then Daniel says back, "It's not me; it's Hashem," etc. Okay, so he made Daniel then in charge of the entire malucha. Similar to Yosef, he gives him like, you know, he, I don't know if he officially makes him viceroy, but he gives him sweeping powers over the whole Malucha. And then Daniel asks the king, the Daniel Ba'amin Malka Umani al Avidita di Medinas Bavel, and he puts in charge of the various department heads of Bavel, Lishadrach Meshach Ba'aved Nego, which those are the Aramaic names for Hananiah, Mishael, Ba'azariah. For Daniel Bistra Malka. So Daniel is the chief advisor to the king, and then he requests from the king to appoint Hanani, Mishael, Ba'azariah as the next three in command, as the, you know, the major department heads. So again, in the first Maisa in Daniel, you find that although all four of them davened, but it was Daniel who went to the king and asked for time, it is Daniel who had the vision at night, and he gets appointed, and then he pulls them up with him. Okay. Now, then you have the next paragimel in Sefer Daniel. Now you have the Maisa of the Tzelem, that Nebuchadnezzar puts up this idol, and it's a gigantic idol, and he commands his whole kingdom that when you hear the music playing, the trumpets and all that, everybody should bow down. So so this happens, and everybody bows down, and then some of the advisors come to the king, and they say that they tell, like the Gemara says, the pasuk says they told Lashon Hara, they said Hanani, Mishael, Ba'azariah didn't bow down.
There were Jewish advisors that said that? No.
So the Nebuchadnezzar indignantly calls in Hanani, Mishael, Ba'azariah. He says, "Did you do this?" And he said, "Now." The punishment for not bowing down to the idol was to be thrown into the Kibshan Aish. So he says to them, when he challenges them, he doesn't just challenge them, because he says, and this is the key phrase, he says, "Don't you know that if you don't bow down, you're going to get thrown into the fire? Uman hu Allah. And who is the God, the Yishez Vinchain Mi Yedai, who's going to save you from my hands?" So not only does Nebuchadnezzar call him on the carpet, but he also challenges and says, "And no God could possibly save you from this." So they couldn't let that go. Hanani, Mishael, Ba'azariah, it's one thing to call someone, but to say that no God can save you, that's a chutzpah. So they say back with chutzpah. They say back to Nebuchadnezzar, and they say that we're not afraid of you, that our God can save us from the fire, and we will not bow down. Whether our God chooses to save us or not save us, we're not bowing down. But he could save us if he wants. So then Nebuchadnezzar is enraged, and he has Hanamishaya. First, he has the fire, which was already a burning inferno, a towering inferno. He has it stoked, right, seven times, you know, the psukim. He makes it seven times greater than it was. And then he has the three of them thrown in to the fire. The ones who threw them in were killed throwing them in. That's how bad the fire was. And then Nebuchadnezzar is astounded. It says he gets up off his chair in astonishment, and he says, "Weren't there three who were thrown in?" And he sees, this is the pasuk over here, he sees four people in the fire who seem to be okay, and the fourth one looks like a Bar Elohim, which means a Malach. So then he calls out to the three, to Hanani, Mishael, Ba'azariah. He says, "Come on out," and they come out, and they see that they're not, their hair isn't singed, their clothing is fine, they don't smell of fire, everything is wonderful. So he's astounded by this, And of course, he announces that nobody should touch them, that they're special people, etc., etc., etc. Okay. Now, so here you have a Maisa without Daniel, just with Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah. Our Gemara asks, where was Daniel? Where'd he go? Why wasn't he there? So the Gemara tells us some obscure reasons of why he wasn't there. He had gone to dig a river, or he had gone to get animal fodder, or he had gone to get the pigs from Mitzrayim. So I wish I knew pshat in those things. I don't have good pshat in those reasons of where he was. And I'm sure that those are fascinating to understand what those three reasons are. But the Gemara says that there were shloisha hayu ba'isa eitza. There were three who all were in agreement that Daniel shouldn't be there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want Daniel to be there because he didn't want that people should say that Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were saved in the zchus of Daniel. Daniel didn't want to be there because he was afraid, since he had been made into an Avodah Zarah by Nebuchadnezzar, and we know the pasuk says Pesilei Elohim Tesrefun Ba'ish, that Avodah Zarah gets burned in a fire, so he was afraid that he'd get thrown in the fire. That he was in Sakana of being thrown in the fire because he was in Avodah Zarah. So he didn't want to be there. And Nebuchadnezzar didn't want him there because he didn't want to have to throw him in the fire, because he wanted to save Daniel. He didn't want to lose Daniel, his major advisor, his chief of staff.
The reason the Gemara said, I thought the reason the Gemara says was because he was afraid of the popular opinion.
Right.
If he starts
to throw him in,
knocking off deities.
Right.
Which is an interesting...
Right, right, right. Okay, right. That's right. That's right. You're saying it correctly. So, right. He burned his god in fire. So nobody wanted Daniel to be there. Now, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah here distinguished themselves. They distinguished themselves apart from Daniel, because Daniel is removed from the picture. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want Daniel there because he doesn't want anybody to say that they got saved because of Daniel. Until now, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah are portrayed as like assistants to Daniel, as the yeah, they were great, but he's the leader, he's the one. Now they distinguish themselves on their own. Hashem wanted to have a situation where they themselves could stand out, and they themselves could be the ones who would distinguish themselves. They also there is another person who wasn't there at the time. Yechezkel. Where's Yechezkel? So we know where Yechezkel was. He went to be Mechayeh the Mason. Hashem didn't want Yechezkel around either. This is supposed to be Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah's show. They're the ones who are ready for this kind of Nisayon, and it's to show their greatness that this happened. That they should be Mekadosh Shem Shamayim. And it shouldn't be mitigated by anybody else. Not by Daniel, not by Yechezkel. They're the ones doing it. Now Yechezkel goes, as we know, Hashem tells him, I want you to go and be Mechayeh Mason. So here we have a fascinating set of events. It's all happening at the same time, where you have Daniel is removed from the picture so as not to give the impression
meanwhile back at the ranch.
Right, right. So he's removed from the picture so as not to give the impression that they were saved because of him. So now there, Yechezkel is removed from the picture because he has something else to do, which is to be Mechayeh Mason. And then, as we know, the Gemara says six Nisan happened on that day. The Kivshan was lifted up so everybody could see it. The walls came down so everybody could see it. They were saved. The Tzelem fell down, etc. And Yechezkel is Mechayeh Mason. Now, when Yechezkel is Mechayeh Mason, so the Gemara tells us that the Mason he brought back to life come to Nebuchadnezzar, and they smack him on the mouth. And Nebuchadnezzar says, what's going on? And they say, their friend, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, the three you threw into the fire, their buddy just went and was Mechayeh Mason. Like, what do you think? You think you're going to throw them in the fire and kill them? You can't even if a person is dead, their buddy can bring him back to life. And you're trying to kill them? What do you think you're dealing with over here? So Nebuchadnezzar gets a tremendous lesson in the power of the tzaddikim of Yisrael, of the Nevi'im of Yisrael. and he is.
Well, it's not the mason that is the bone. Their bones. So like they were like walking skeletons.
Well, so it's a right. So the question is, well, that depends on what happened. If you learn that they came back to life and they actually went and married and had children.
Bo Atzmos, right?
Yeah, so the Atzmos came. So that's what Rashi says, because the kelim you were drinking from were made out of the bones. And then they came back to life. They slapped them in the face. So Nebuchadnezzar is getting a lesson in the godless of the Nevi'im of Klal Yisrael, and obviously the godless of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's reminiscent of the Maisa that the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, where we spoke last week, 2 weeks ago, about Antoninus and Rebbe, and the Gemara Avodah Zarah tells us that Antoninus, when he went to visit Rebbe, he always had to do it in complete secrecy. So he had a secret tunnel to go to Rebbe's house, and he used to take 2 avadim with him so that he would have some protection. He wouldn't be alone. So he used to kill 1 eved on the way there and 1 eved on the way back, so that no one would ever live to tell the tale.
Okay.
Right. So that's what he would do. So when he was once visiting with Rebbe, and he had told Rebbe that no one should ever be here when I'm with you. No one should ever be with him here, because he doesn't want anybody to know. So one day he comes in, and Rav Chanina Bar Chama, who succeeded Rebbe as the Rosh Hashiva, Rav Chanina Bar Chama was there. So Rebbe was, so Antoninus was taken aback. He was upset. He said, didn't I ask you that no one should be here? So Rebbe said, this person, he's not a person, he's a malach. Look, I'll show you. So he said to Rav Chanina Bar Chama, go to that entranceway where, you know, that secret entranceway where Antoninus just came through. There's a slave sleeping over there at the entrance. Go wake him up and bring him in. So Rav Chanina Bar Chama goes out that entranceway, and he finds the Eved is dead. So he says, what am I supposed to do? I can't just come back and say that he's dead, because that would be a basura ra. It's not the right thing to do. And you know, as he goes through his options, he says, you know what? Okay, I'll just have to bring him back to life. So he brings the Eved back to life, and he comes in with the Eved to Antoninus and to Rebbe. So Rebbe was doing this to show Antoninus that, look, you know, what are you worried about? He's not a person, he's a malach. So Antoninus' response to Rebbe is, he's totally not impressed. His response is, I know that the smallest among you can be Mechaya Mason. That doesn't impress me. I know you can do that, but please, don't let anybody be here when I come to visit.
But keep it a secret.
Right. So I'm saying the here Nebuchadnezzar, Antoninus, because he was such a great tzaddik himself, Antoninus understood the godless of the Chachamim. But Nebuchadnezzar, he didn't understand it. Here he's being given a lesson in the incredible godless of the Nevi'im of Klal Yisrael and of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then the Gemara says that he was he started praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he would have been Megane all of the Shiros HaSushpachos of David HaMelech. He would have said a song that would have outshined all of what David HaMelech did, until the Melech slapped him to stop him from doing it, so that he shouldn't have that Zchus of praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what does that mean? What is the message over here that's happening in this whole Gemara, that he's being brought to the point where he's ready to say this incredible Shira, and then he stopped?
Why is it that after at the beginning he says, okay, I see there's nothing greater than your God, and then now he says, hey, your God can't even save.
After the dream, after the vision?
After the dream, he says, oh, your God is like on top of everything. And then he says,
well, he wasn't.
Oh,
he wasn't.
Your God can't even, can't
he wasn't as
me.
Impressed. You say that.
Oh, yeah, Daniel's God too. I mean,
the second Maisa brings him to a higher level. This pasuk, the Gemara says that he was slapped in the face to stop him from saying the Shira, was after the second Maisa. Mm-hmm. The first Maisa only brought him to a certain Hakara of Hashem. That's the point I'm trying to make to you. That's part of what I'm trying to make. Through Daniel, he was brought to a certain level of Hakara of who Hashem is, and through Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, he's brought to the next level of who Hashem is, to the point where he was ready to outdo David HaMelech in Shiras HaSishbachos, till he was slapped and he couldn't do it.
It seems like there's a recurring theme of like Rishayim praising God, like Nebuchadnezzar, Sennacherib.
Okay.
You have it in
Metzia. Okay, so you're on the right track. This is the point where
they do it anyway. They're like,
contrast
God's great.
Paro, right? So what? I mean, where's the schos coming from? Like, where's the schos supposed to come after to be?
To be able to do that.
I mean, bitalka to be
right.
Seeing that, things that.
Okay, now Nebuchadnezzar was not a good person. He was a big rasha. He had sweeping power over the world. We're going to learn later. The way he was able to control the animals. He rode on a lion, and he had a snake in his hand. I mean, he was just all powerful, and supernaturally powerful. More than that. Nebuchadnezzar, the Gemara in Shabbos tells us, had a very specific way of subjugating the kings who he conquered. That each day he had another king that he would do Mishkav Zachar to. That was his way of showing his shlita, his control over all the kings that he conquered. That was what Nebuchadnezzar did. When it came time for Tzidkiyahu, who was a tzaddik, who had been taken into Golos by Nebuchadnezzar, he attempted to, and he was stopped by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Gemara that tells how he was stopped, also in a supernatural way. So Nebuchadnezzar was not a good person, but here he is brought to an incredible hakar of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is.
But if you compare him, the way he treated the Jewish people as a whole, relative to he allowed them to prosper in Babel.
Right. Because Nebuchadnezzar was interested in there not being a Beis Hamikdash. Just as Achashverosh is interested in not being a Beis Hamikdash, Achatzi Amalchus, the interest there is that they all knew that Klal Yisrael represented HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they had to stop that representation. That was the interest.
Compared to the Romans, who just like...
Yeah. Because they're already it's a whole different...
It seems like
After Avodah Zarah is removed from the world,
or
a whole different...
The Assyrians, I mean, they're just kind
of... Yeah, okay, this is...
They're like Eretz Yisrael too, right?
Right, but I mean,
it seems like the both times that the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, it's a last resort. Like, they didn't really want to. Nebuchadnezzar comes and he conquers Yerushalayim. He could have burnt it down. He says no. Then he comes back and places the king again, and he still.
Yeah, it was like, can't blame him.
The Romans too. Like, they fought and finally they said, okay, we're going to destroy the Beit HaMikdash.
Yeah, I'm saying we know that the real reason behind that is that Klal Yisrael was holding on. They were doing some teshuva. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving us more and more time to do tshuva before he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And eventually, Klal Yisrael did not do enough tshuva and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed.
Did they make an attempt to destroy it and were stopped somehow? I don't know.
Now, what is happening over here with this whole Maisa? What is going on over here? So, we know that Klal Yisrael, as we just mentioned, is here to represent the HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. That's the purpose of Klal Yisrael. Now, when we do the right thing, like we're supposed to do, so we're Mekaneshim Shamayim, we don't need to go out and preach the Torah and its values to the rest of the world. By our example, they are taught. That's the way that it's supposed to happen. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees to it that if it's a Shas Geula, like when Klal Yisrael first went to Eretz Yisrael, that all the Goyim would find out about us, because they would hear about this great nation in Eretz Yisrael, that they serve, one, like Rashi says it in Parshas Vayechi, that through, he says in his Vayechir and Vilas HaBracha, that through Zevulun, Zevulun Omar, no, that's Binyamin. What? Right, so it's not there. So in Parshas Vayechi, where it says, Zevulun Chav Yamishkan, right. He's going to bring me a Chomesh. That through Klal Yisrael, what happens is that the Goyim come to do business with this very prosperous nation, and once they get there, they say, well, once we're here, let's go see what this nation's all about. And they go to Yerushalayim, and they see the Beis HaMikdash, and they can't believe it, that here all these people are serving one God in one Beis HaMikdash, one Kohen Gadol, then they're astounded by the echad of Klal Yisrael, that they can't believe it because they're not used to that. They're used to all kinds of gods and like that, and it's astonishing to them. That's the model that it's supposed to be, that through us living in Eretz Yisrael, in an insular country of Eretz Yisrael, and obviously doing trade and business with the nations around us, but primarily being in Eretz Yisrael serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our shmua, our fame, will spread far and wide, and that will influence the entire world. And how will it spread far and wide? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see to it that it gets spread far and wide. That's the vision that it's supposed to be. Unfortunately, Klal Yisrael, we all did Chataim, we're still doing Chataim, which is why we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore, Golos takes place. Now, Golos is the scattering of Klal Yisrael. Now, by being scattered throughout the Umas HaOlam, so then, that means we weren't fulfilling our mission in Eretz Yisrael of being the representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, which means the entire world suffered because the entire world was not affected by us. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes us and scatters us throughout the world. And now, Baal Karchenu, whether we like it or not, we are in contact with the rest of the world. There's no way to avoid it. Doesn't matter where you go, where you are, it's impossible to create an insular community in the way that it would be B'Shas Geula. We are Tachas, the Shlita of the Umas HaOlam, and there's no way to live without it. So as a result, we now are in contact with everybody, and they see who we are, either for good or not for good. Obviously, that's in our hands, whether it's going to be a positive influence or chas v'shalom the opposite. It will be a kiddush Hashem or a chilul Hashem. But Klal Yisrael will always be in a position of either being mekana Shem Shemayim or chas v'shalom being mechal Shem Shemayim. That's the way it has to be. Either it's going to be because we're doing the right thing and we're in Eretz Yisrael being mekana Shem Shemayim, or it's going to be because we're in Golos and we're scattered around throughout everybody. Now, the Golos that we're in now is scattered throughout the whole world. That was not true in Golos Bavel. Golos Bavel, they were taken to Bavel. That's where they were. When they were in Bavel, that means their primary interaction was with Kastim, with the Babylonians. And who is the leader of the Babylonians? That's Nebuchadnezzar. He's the king of the whole world. So influencing Nebuchadnezzar is the greatest influence there can be on the entire world. In other words, if we would be in Yerushalayim with a Beis HaMikdash, with our own Melech serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our influence would be through us to the whole world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Yerushalayim because we weren't doing the right thing, plopped us down in Bavel, put us under the Shlita of Nebuchadnezzar, who he made in charge of the entire world, and then had Maisim happen that would affect Nebuchadnezzar profoundly, where he would be impressed by who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, and then through him comes the influence to the whole world, because Nebuchadnezzar sent out messages after the whole Maisim with Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah that their God is unbelievable, leave them alone, they're wonderful, blah, 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 blah. So it all comes from Nebuchadnezzar. That's a slap in the face to us. It should have come through our Melech. It should have come through our Kohen Gadol. It should have come through our Nevi'im and our Talmidei Chachamim. But instead, it comes through Nebuchadnezzar. Now today, you don't have one king who is over the whole world, the whole business. We're scattered throughout the whole world. That whole world should also, the known world is larger than it was then. So there's, you know, whatever the reasons are that now it's a different model.
All the presidents advise you.
Yeah, Rahm Emanuel and Obama.
Axelrod.
Right. But that's the other way around. That's the
Bush, that
there's going to be a Kiddush Hashem or a Chilul Hashem, one way or another. We can't avoid it. We would rather just bury our heads, just, you know, leave us alone, let us, you know, and that way we shouldn't, chas v'shalom, be in a position where we can be blamed for things. Jews don't want to be noticed when we're in Golos. That's not a good thing. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to let that happen. We're going to be noticed whether we like it or not. We have no choice. So that's what's happening over here. The Bachurei Yisrael, who were taken into Golos, that they shone, they glowed. What does it say over here? Neganes Hachama B'Yofyon. That's obviously a supernatural beauty. And we're not talking about normal beauty. Even after they're killed, they're still this incredible beauty. That's a beauty of Klal Yisrael in Geula, not in Galus. That's the beauty that Klal Yisrael could be if we were doing the right thing. That's the neshama showing forth, shining forth from the body. That's what that is. B'shas Geula, that affects everybody as it's meant to do. But when they're taken into Galus, then Nebuchadnezzar has them killed. He has them destroyed. He has them trampled. Get rid of that beauty. Get rid of that representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There shouldn't be any representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Jews. And they're destroyed. But in the end, it is those same people who were representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where the beauty of their neshama shone through, they're the same ones who bring Nebuchadnezzar himself, who tried to stamp out that representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They themselves bring Nebuchadnezzar to the ultimate hakara of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. They slap him on the face, and to the point where he's ready to say Shir Tzvi Shbachos that would outdo David HaMelech. He stopped. Why is he stopped? Because ultimately, he's not the Am Segula. See, if he was able to do it, then he would have replaced Klal Yisrael in our mission. Ultimately, you can't have the world come to an ultimate Hakara of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through anyone but Klal Yisrael. It can't happen through Nebuchadnezzar. There can be a very strong Hakara, but it cannot be the ultimate Shlemus of the world in any other way but through Klal Yisrael directly. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu stops Nebuchadnezzar. It can't be that it's going to be through him. There can be a certain amount of Hakara that comes through him, but it cannot be the ultimate Hakara.
Do we know what the Bachurim, were they guilty of something that as a result?
I don't know.
They must have
been killed. Right, so, but I don't know if it means HaKadosh Baruch Hu medatik mechasid of kuklat ha'saira, or if it really is that they were, I don't know. Doesn't tell us. It seems that it really happened because they were brought back to life later. I mean, if it was a mashal, if it was a real thing. Now, the Gemara says on the top of Tzadi Gimel that they were greater than Malachi HaSharis. That Chanan Mishal was greater than Malachi HaSharis. And then the Gemara goes on to say, Amar of Yoichanan, I'm about 10 lines down. My dechsev amati e'elev samar o chazav esan sinav. What does it mean when it says in the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Hashem said, I said I would go up on the tamar, on the palm tree, I would hold on to its branches. Amati e'elev samar. I said I would go up on a palm tree. Elu Yisrael. That means Klal Yisrael. I wanted to go up on a palm tree. Rashi says that there would be a lot of tzaddikim, and I would, so to speak, ride on top of the tzaddikim. They are the ones who would hold me up as the example to the world. Now all I got is the one branch of Chanan Mishal Azariah. It's Nebuch. This is all I have. That's what Kadosh Baruch Hu says. I had a kasha, a stira, for a long time until I realized it's not really a kasha. The Gemara says in Kiddushin, the Gemara says that Elam, which was the neighborhood, the area where Daniel, Chanan Mishal Azariah, lived, it says Elam was poor. It was poor in Torah. So the pasuk, the Gemara says, and the pasuk about Elam is Achois Lanu Kitana V'Shadayim Einla. We have a little sister, V'Shadayim Einla. She doesn't yet have Shadayim. She hasn't matured yet, so she doesn't have Shadayim. So the Rashi says, Shehaya ba Daniel, Kidachsiv Vani B'Shushan Avira Asher Be'Elam HaMedina. He was in Elam. V'Chein Mordechai. Daniel and Mordechai were in Elam. V'lo Hayu Doiram Oiskin Ba Torah. Their generation did not learn Torah. They didn't study Torah. V'lo Yizachu Elu HaChachamim L'Lamed. They weren't Zaycha to teach. Even though they were Chachamim, Daniel and Mordechai, but they weren't Zaycha to teach. Ki'ilu lo haya lahem shadayim lahanik. It's as if they didn't have shadayim to nurse. They didn't have it because they weren't able to teach because their dar didn't learn Torah, as opposed to the Gemara compares it to Ezra, who was able to teach Torah.
Did Mordechai have 24,000 Talmidim?
Well, what?
Didn't Mordechai have something like 12,000 Talmidim?
Okay, it's good kasha. That's good kasha. Also, he brought the kids together. Okay, it's good kasha. Well, that it depends if Hasach is Daniel or not. It seems that he was. The pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, right before this pasuk of Amarti Elev Samar, it says Zois Kaima Seich Dam Sala Samar. This is your kaima, your height. You're like a tamar. You're like a palm tree. Vishadayich la Ashkalois, and your shadayim are like Ashkalois, are like clusters. So the Rashi says over here, Vishadayich lashkalois, Daniel Chananya Mishava Azaria, Shahayu lach keshadayim. They were for you like shadayim, Klal Yisrael. Linak mehem, to nurse from them. This seems to be a direct steer to the Gemara. The Gemara says that Daniel and Mordechai were not able, shadayim eila. They don't have shadayim. The exact analogy is used here in the opposite. They were shadayim. That they were able to, Klal Yisrael was able to nurse from them. Domu le'ashkolais, shemashpios mashke, they're like clusters of grapes that are giving off a drink. Kach heim, also they, hishpiu lahanik, the lilmoid es hakol, they were mashpia to feed, to nurse, and to teach everyone. Shein yira kir aschem, that there is no God like your God.
That's what they were able to teach.
Ah, so that's the thing. So when I first had this kasha, wasn't medayik in the Rashi. I didn't read it carefully, but then I saw that shein yira kir aschem. That what are they? In what way are they like shadayim? That they're teaching Shein Yira Kiraschem. In what way are they not like Shadayim? They weren't able to teach Torah. Daniel and Mordechai, and I'm assuming Hanani and Mishael Azariah are the same thing, because the Gemara here says, I wanted to have a Tamar, and instead I only had a Sansin Echad, Hanani and Mishael Azariah. They weren't Zoiche to teach Torah to Klal Yisrael. They weren't Zoiche to be in a Shas Geula, like Ezra HaSeifer, who brings everybody up to Geula. They weren't Zoiche that Klal Yisrael and their time should be the ones who, through Klal Yisrael, comes the Hakara of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. They weren't Zoiche to do that. But they were Shadayim in regard to that they were able to teach in Yira Kir Aschem, there is no Hashem like your Hashem. That message went not to Klal Yisrael, I mean it did go to Klal Yisrael also, but it went to Nebuchadnezzar and through him to the entire world. And in that way they were like Shadayim. So they weren't like Shadayim in the sense of directly to Klal Yisrael, but they were like Shadayim in fulfilling the mission of Klal Yisrael through a surrogate, through Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, there's more to say. I'll end off with one thing over here. It's 5 to 9. I'll end up with one point, which is that we're going to see later a fascinating thing, which is that Nebuchadnezzar, he says over here that that I saw four people in the Kibshan Ha'esh, and the fourth one looked like a malach. Right? How did he know what a malach looks like? How did Nebuchadnezzar know what a malach looks like?
Anything that doesn't look human, I mean...
That's Pashat, Pashat, right? Zok the Medrash, that, and we'll see later on, that when Sancheriv came against Chizkiyahu, which is again what was brought before about Sancheriv, when Sancheriv came against Chizkiyahu, and he brought his entire army, which we'll talk about, was a huge, a massive army, and it could have been Gog Magog, and because of Chizkiyahu's tefillah, then, and his tshuva, and because of the learning of Chizkiyahu, then the entire army was completely decimated, completely wiped out. There were only, I think, three or four survivors of that entire ordeal. The Malach came, Gavriel came, and destroyed the entire machina overnight. Boom! They were all destroyed. On the night of Pesach, we say it. We say it at the Seder. We talk about, at the end in Nirtza, we talk about how one of the things that happened on the night of Pesach is the destruction of Sancheriv's army. The one of the survivors was Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was a foot soldier in Sanherib's army, and he witnessed Gavriel's destruction. So here in the Kibshan HaEsh, when Gavriel comes, Gavriel is the Malach of fire, and he comes to cool off the fire, which is a chiddush that really you would think the Malach of cold should cool off the fire. But no, that's a sneis v'sachneis, that the Malach of Esh comes and cools off the Esh. So when he comes, Nebuchadnezzar sees Gavriel in the thing, and he says, "I recognize that thing." Now, obviously, Nebuchadnezzar is not going to see a Malach for what a Malach is, but he notices something that draws him back to that fateful night many, many years earlier with the destruction of Sanherib's army.
Where is that reference that he was in the army?
I believe it's later on here. If not, believe it or not, I'll find it. If it's not before, I'll find it.
Were they related?
What?
Nebuchadnezzar and Sanherib.
I don't know. That I don't know. I don't think so.
But in the last 3 minutes, could you sum up how, since we're in this, so we're sort of all born into this vidyaved state of existence, like how are we supposed to relate to the Gullis as individuals? I mean, there seems to be some people who go, you know, like Lubavitch and just are like, you know, go everywhere, and there's people who sort of insulate themselves into a community that, you know, they don't only speak Yiddish, they don't speak English. You know, my sister tried to teach English to six-year-olds, like, in Canada. You know, so, I mean, it seems like these are the two extremes. Like, but from the way you're describing it, it seems that we have a responsibility to be...
make a Kiddush Hashem.
Be a Kiddush Hashem, and not necessarily, I mean, and actively... It seems like...
To make a Kiddush Hashem, you have to act properly. What I'm saying is, we are put in situations whether we like it or not. You don't have to go find a place to make a Kiddush Hashem. Every day, we come in contact with people who are not Jewish. And
certainly there are Jews in Gauls that don't.
It's true, it's possible, but I don't believe it's possible to live your life that way. I believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to force, if not you, then your community. You know, you can have this community where they're living, but then it hits the news.
That's the Diamond District.
No, I'm saying it hits the news either positively
like
or negatively.
Like they have like do business. Political advisors, and they have
whatever
like
it is. It's gonna come out. Kodesh Baruch Hu is not gonna let it be that Klal Yisrael can just go about what's the word?
It's
a
violation of
ghetto.
What's that?
Isolated?
No, not isolated. I'm saying without being noticed. Whatever the word is.
Under the radar?
Incognito.
Is it against the will of God to attempt to do so? It seems like
I'm not gonna take it. I mean, look, I can tell you what I'm used to. You see what I'm used to.
Well,
I mean,
you live in Atlanta, so
right? No more than that. But that's the way I was brought up, and that's the way the yeshivas that I attend, and my rebbeim and my yeshiva. This is the mahalach. But the other people about the mahalach. I mean, I don't think we can say from here what is the correct mahalach. I don't know if there is one correct mahalach. But all I'm saying is that we can't avoid it. We're going to be either a Kiddush Hashem or Chas V'Shalom, the opposite, and there's no way to avoid that. That's the point. Next week, Mitzvah Hashem, we're going to do this Maisa of Yehoshua Kohen Gadol and the Kibshan Aish again. We'll talk about that as well.